Hi, welcome to the Loudoun Wildlife Conservancy podcast. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and this is episode number 3. Today we're going to talk about bats. Summer is a great time to see bats as they're flying around our yards and over fields eating up insects. Earlier in the week, I was actually out monitoring one of our bluebird nest box trails, and while the nesting season is sort of winding down a bit for the bluebirds, at this particular trail, this is the time when little brown bats start moving into the boxes and using them for roosts during the day. It's kind of neat. In fact, out of the 11 boxes that I monitored, 4 of them had bats, and I counted a total of 15 individuals. It's pretty cool to see. So with that as inspiration, I thought bats would be a good topic for today. I'll include on the blog posting for this episode a photo that I took at one of the bluebird boxes with the bats in it. They're very sweet to look at. So, a bit about the bats. Last spring, I wrote a lead article for the spring and summer issues of the Habitat Herald. So the podcast today will lean a bit on that, but if you're interested in learning more about Loudoun's bats, check out our website under the Habitat Herald archives and look for Bats of Loudoun, and you'll be able to see a 2-part article that talks all about our bats and goes into a lot more detail. So bats are one of the most misunderstood mammals that we have. There are all kinds of myths that exist about bats being blind, getting caught in your hair, and being vicious animals that carry all kinds of disease. So while none of these myths are really true, bats, they definitely don't get caught in your hair. Bats are really terrific wild neighbors, and they're amazing in their own right, playing such a critical role in our environment. The key role that I think we know about is that they eat huge numbers of insects. And in summertime, like now, we start to see bats returning to our night skies. Earlier in the spring, they would have been migrating back to Loudoun from places south or emerging from hibernation in trees and caves not far from here. So the interesting thing about bats is that they're the only mammals that are able to fly. At rest, bats fold their wings alongside their bodies to protect their delicate fingers and wing membranes. And as most people know, bats are nocturnal, so our best chance to see them is just after sunset as they drop down from roosts to fly through the air. So that's the best time. Bats are the only major predator of night-flying insects. They catch their prey in flight, often feeding in open areas where insects swarm, like over fields and open water and around streetlights. Most bats use a wingtip to sort of hit an insect and collect it into its mouth. Other bats use their mouths just open wide to scoop the insects out of the air. The thing that I find really interesting, too, though, is that insects have evolved with the bats to avoid being eaten. So sort of as the bats adapt and come up with new tricks on how to catch the insects themselves, the moths and others, are also coming up with ways to avoid being eaten. A typical bat can consume over 500 insects in just 1 hour, or nearly 3,000 insects in a single night. When you think about the little brown bats, like the ones that were in the bluebird nest boxes, 100 little brown bats, which could be typical for, you know, a nursery or one of the roosts around here, 100 little brown bats can consume more than 250,000 mosquito-sized insects in one night. And that's a whole lot of insects that aren't flying around our yards and over our heads during the summer. With bats and their life cycles, bats rouse from hibernation in March and migrate to their summer roosts in April. The pregnant females who mated the previous fall seek sheltered roosts in buildings, tree cavities, and foliage to raise their pups. If you're going to put up a bat house, the best time to do it is fall or sometime early in April, or even March or something like that, before the females start to look for a roost. The males are generally solitary throughout the season, and I actually wonder, with those bats that are hanging out in the bluebird nest boxes, I wonder if those are males. because I think the females at this time of year are still raising their babies in the big nurseries. So I'm not sure where those would be located at this particular site, but it's definitely interesting to see the bats in the boxes. Bats are mammals, meaning that they're warm-blooded, they have hair, they bear live young, and they feed their babies milk. Bats have one of the lowest reproductive rates for animals their size. They give birth to only one or two pups per year, and the pups are born from May through June or July. By mid-July, as pups get to be about 5 weeks old, they start to fly around and hunt on their own. But because they're still learning, their mothers continue to nurse them until they can adequately feed themselves. So there's a lot of a relationship that goes on there. Because insects are few during the winter months, the bats of Loudoun either migrate or hibernate. For little brown bats, big brown bats, and northern myotis, maternity colonies disband in late summer and early fall, and the bats take flight to travel to hibernation places. This is also the time when the males and females join up together, sometimes in really large groups. And this rendezvous brings the adults together so that they can mate, because a lot of these species mate in the fall. And then there's a delayed insemination until springtime. But it's also a time in the fall. This is when they teach the young bats where to find the hibernation caves and the other really important spots for their survival. In terms of bats and rabies, this gets to the disease part of it. The incidence of rabies in wild bats is actually really low. According to Bat Conservation International, which is a really cool organization if you want to learn more about bats, worldwide more than 30,000 people die from rabies each year. However, 99% of these deaths are due to contact with rabid dogs, not bats. In modern countries, like the United States, where most dogs and cats are now vaccinated against rabies, the disease of rabies is very rare in humans. And the North American bat species most frequently found in our homes or bat houses are the big brown bats and the little brown bats. And according to the Bat Conservation International, they have not been known to cause a single cause of human rabies in the past 15 years. And in fact, only 4 cases are believed to have come from common household dwelling species in all of American history. So while bats are a species that can carry rabies, the actual incidence of catching it is pretty low. All of that said, though, if you do find a bat on the ground, you should take caution. Sometimes a young pup will fall from a nursery roost, or you might find a grounded bat that's sick or injured or dehydrated or, you know, exhausted or malnourished or something like that. And as with all wild animals, you shouldn't handle bats. There are instructions. If you go to batworld.org, you can find out how to safely rescue a bat. But in general, what you want to do is be sure to wear leather work gloves or garden gloves in order to pick up the bat, and then put it in something like a cardboard box using the gloved hands, and then get it to a rehabber. There's a fantastic organization here in Northern Virginia called Bat World Nova, and if you look on our website, under educational resources, bats, you'll find books and resources. You'll find the link to Bat World Nova, or you can just do a Google search on it too. As with all wild animals, if a bat feels threatened, it might try to bite you, but this is only in self-defense. So that's why you really want to be wearing gloves or something like that so that you can protect yourself from being bitten. So that's kind of the status on the rabies part of things. While there are over 1,100 species of bats worldwide, here in Loudoun we have just 7 species. And I'll give a little bit of a highlight on each of the different species that we have. But again, you can check out our Habitat Herald archives to see the Bats of Loudoun article to find out more about each of these. So the first species we have is the little brown bat. It's approximately 3.5 inches long, and little brown bats mate in the fall with fertilization delayed until spring ovulation. And that happens sort of after they emerge from hibernation, then they start ovulating, and then the fertilization happens, and then they have their babies. So little brown bats use a variety of summer roosts. They can be buildings, tree cavities, crevices, things like that. The males are solitary, and they roost in hollow trees, under loose bark, and in other crevices. And this is the most common species that we'll find near people's homes and in bat houses. In October and November, little brown bats move to their hibernation sites, gathering in caves, tunnels, and mine shafts. So that's why we don't see them during the winter. The next species is the big brown bat, larger. It's about 4 to 5 inches long. Traditionally, big brown bats formed nursery colonies beneath loose bark and in small tree cavities, but they've also adapted to using man-made structures as forests have been disappearing. Today, nursery colonies are often found in barns, houses, and churches. They might be under siding, things like that. Big brown bats are not migratory, and sometimes they use the same roost for both summer and winter. In fact, it's interesting that the big brown bats might not go that far at all. If you have them in the garage in the summertime, they might move to the attic or vice versa. If they're in a barn during the summer, they might move to a garage, that kind of thing. The big brown bat is the most common species that we have enter a house, so if you have one, come on in, you might have a big brown bat. And numerous studies have shown that big brown bats consume numerous crop pests and forest pests. In one summer, a colony of 150 big brown bats can consume enough adult cucumber beetles to prevent egg laying that would produce 33 million of their rootworm larvae, which is a major pest of corn. So here in Loudoun, where we have quite a few cornfields, the bats are no doubt playing a critical role. Big brown bats are among the last ones to hibernate, and they enter their hibernation areas in late October to November. So we'll stop seeing them around that period. The next bat species we have is the eastern red bat. They're about 3.5 to 4.75 inches long, and they have bright red to rusty long silk fur. This is one of our few bats that has contrasting color sexes. Females are dull, with a buffy chestnut kind of coloring that's a little bit frosted, while the males are almost an orange-red. So that's an interesting thing about these bats. This is a tree-dwelling species that lives mostly in dense foliage and hibernates in the open or under leaf litter. So it's good to leave the leaves. Unlike most bats, red bats often give birth to twins or even triplets. During the day, the pups will hold on to their mothers with one foot and perch with the others. Mothers will leave their pups at night to forage, but will often move them to safer locations if they need to. And the red bats fly in the early evening and have been timed at speeds of 40 miles per hour. That's pretty quick. In late September to November, the eastern red bats start migrating south, and they actually follow the same Atlantic flyways that migratory birds do. In the late 1880s, there were reports of large migrating flocks passing in daytime, but since we've had a lot of declines, these sites haven't been seen for a long time. So those are our more common species. Of the uncommon species that we have, the first is our silver-haired bat, and it's about 3.75 inches long. Silver-haired bats depend on old-growth forest areas, so managing forest for diverse age, allowing snags to stay in place, and maintaining forested corridors is critical to the silver-haired bat. Mating is thought to occur in the fall, with delayed fertilization until spring, similar to the other bats. The males and the females spend fall and winter in the same southern areas, but in springtime, the females migrate further north than the males, and they often hibernate in wood piles. So that's an interesting difference there, too. The next bat is the northern myotis, about 3 to 5 inches long. Northern myotis are forest bats needing dense forest stands for their habitat. They forage on hillsides and ridge forests rather than riparian and floodplain forests. Very little is known about the reproduction of this species, but similar to the little brown bats, they're thought to mate in the fall. Next is the hoary bat. This is the largest of our Loudon bats, with a length of 5 to 5.5 inches long. People rarely get to see this bat because they're not attracted to human structures and they still stay pretty well hidden in the foliage during the day. With this bat, the females do not form nursery colonies as other bats do, but instead are really solitary. Hoary bats are strong, swift flyers, and they often are found in the company of birds as they migrate along the same routes. The sexes remain separate during the summer, but then migrate south in waves, migrating to tropical and subtropical areas to spend the winter. So they're a long-distance flyer. This species is found across the United States and throughout Virginia, but interesting, most of the hoary bats found in Virginia are female. The hoary bat is most often encountered during the migration periods, as most seem to go further north to give birth. The next bat is the eastern pipistrelle. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And this is our seventh bat. It's one of our smallest eastern bats, with a total length of 2 3/4 to about 3 3/4 inches long. They're active until late October, and they hibernate in caves and mines, which are often too tiny for other species to get into. There are 1 to 700 per cave, some hanging singly scattered about, but preferring the warm sites that are in protected passages. The interesting thing here, too, is that the individuals may occupy the same spot each winter. So they'll go to that cave and they'll find their spot in that cave or that tunnel. The future of Loudon's bats. While most of our bat species are not yet threatened, they are all suffering dramatic population declines. Bats' habitats and foraging areas disappear as woodlands are cleared and farms are developed. Aquatic insect populations on which our bats prey are just becoming scarcer as waterways are polluted and eroded. So that's, you know, something we need to be aware of. Also, pesticides destroy the insects that bats rely on and can also actually poison the bats themselves. Another thing that sometimes we don't think about is that cats left outdoors can maim and kill thousands of bats annually. This is when, you know, pups might fall out of a nest, or not a nest, a nursery, and they find them, or if a cat somehow finds some that they want to play catch with. So the other thing that we don't always realize is that humans are a huge threat to bats. They're routinely killed just out of hand if they're found near human habitats because people overreact about human health concerns or they just have unfounded fear and superstition. So there's a lot that the bats have to overcome in addition to, you know, the regular challenges of being a wild animal. But there are things that we can do to help the bats. One is to turn off your bug zappers. Bats actually do a better job than the bug zappers, and the bug zappers kill a lot more beneficial bugs than the actual mosquitoes that they try to attract. We could do a whole podcast on that one. Another thing that you could do is install a pond or a water garden. The bats love to have water around to get a drink, and then also the different insects that are around the water gardens can be helpful for them. Another thing is to let the dead trees stand. You know, having the snags in your yard, that gives them places to roost. It could be a nursery area for them, that kind of thing. And then, of course, you can try installing a bat house. The multi-chamber bat houses are the best ones. Bat houses have only about a 50% success rate, so patience is definitely in order. And you'll want to install your bat house in the winter or the spring, to allow the bats in your neighborhood to become familiar with the new roost over the coming summer. A new bat house will smell of new materials, but as the house weathers outdoors, it will take on a more natural scent. So it could take a little while for the bats to actually start to use it. But, you know, build it and see if they come. Larger bat houses are definitely more successful than the smaller ones. I believe that's because they're able to hold the temperatures better, and it also provides for these larger colonies of bats. Other important tips on how high the bat house should be posted and information like that the direction it should face, other success tips can be found on www.batcon.org. They've done a lot of research on different styles of bat houses, how to mount them, and all of that. So the best thing to do is check out their website and get more details so that you can have your bat house positioned for the greatest success. If you'd like to learn more about bats, as I mentioned, you can visit the website, www.loudonwildlife.org, and we have our Habitat Herald archives with the article on Loudon bats, so you can check that out. Also, check on educational resources and click on books and resources, bats, and you can get to all kinds of links and book recommendations and that kind of thing. And we definitely recommend Bat World Nova. Leslie Sturgis did a wonderful program for us on bats and even brought some little bats for us to see about a year or so ago. And she is very knowledgeable. She's a local rehabber. And if you find a bat that's been injured and needs to go to a local rehabilitator, Bat World Nova is the best place to go. So that's about it on bats. In terms of our upcoming programs and field trips, this coming weekend, August 2nd, is our 12th annual butterfly count. All ages are welcome and all experience levels as well. You can stay out as long as you like. We start generally around 9 o'clock, take a break around noon. You could even join us around noon if that works for you better. And it's a great chance to see a wide variety of butterfly species all in one day. You can sign up on our website at www.loudonwildlife.org. Just click on Citizen Science and then click on Butterfly Count. And you can also see there our count circle and our butterfly list for Loudoun County. So I hope you'll be able to join us, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. The bats of Loudon are quite amazing. They're a lot of fun to watch. Just head on out into your backyard or a local field that has some nice habitat around and watch the skies. Another thing that you can do if you get really interested in bats is you can buy a bat detector. And these are small devices about 3 inches tall, but about the size of like a tiny little radio. And they'll actually pick up the echolocation sounds that the bats are making as they're hunting for prey. So that's pretty neat to do, too. And I believe you can find bat detectors on the BatCon website, and there are some others out there as well. So that's about it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you along the trails. Bye-bye.